interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
So who do I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Monday to you. And it is a Monday, August 5th. You better pack a lunch because it's time to go camping edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, kicking off on 103.7 The Game. Had a few days of rest, a few days in the ATL, ready to rejoin you and get back after it. I am Ben Love for the next 3 hours, joined by the famous Clint D, both of us inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. And yes, it is time to camp. Starting Friday, LSU, UL, they've embodied that. It has been all kinds of hot. That's why I left, went to Atlanta where, yeah, it's hot. They just don't have the humidity, but there's a lot going on with both camps, especially on the LSU side. So I'm going to dive right in. Whenever you want to join, feel free, especially early in today's show. We've got some space for you. 706-0111, the number to play. LSU started camp by naming two new number 18s. Kalyvall Chaisson on the defensive side, outside linebacker returning from injury, and we'll talk plenty about him in this opening segment, and interior offensive lineman Lloyd Cushenberry, who also accompanied Ed Ogeron to Hoover a couple weeks back for SEC Media Days. Cushenberry, of course, an interior offensive lineman. You can't strap the number 18 on him in game action, so his number 79 jersey will have a number 18 patch. So first it was some of the ceremonial news. Then it was getting out there, shorts, shirt, a helmet on. It progressed through yesterday's run on Sunday, LSU did, with the shoulder pads. And here's what we learned. On Sunday, Christian Fulton, Kalyvall Chaisson, Cardell Thomas, amongst those who didn't participate. I know that Stephen Sullivan missed a day in there. He also graduated in 3 years, quite impressive. But he's been back out, so it's going to happen this way. I mean, especially these first few weeks of August, you're going to have guys that shuffle in and out. I vividly remember covering the beat where we would list Craig Lawston as out of practice. I think it was Tuesday. But it was the same day of the week every week. And eventually, either John Chavis or Les Miles told us, you realize he's got a class that makes him miss the first part of practice that we allow y'all into, right? Like, he comes out here and busts skulls after y'all leave. Ah, okay. So, no, Craig Lawson's not injured every Tuesday. He's just attending school. So you don't try to make too much out of any of this. What is interesting, and what does make your ears perk up a little bit, is when you hear that Dee Anderson, for example, suspended, not allowed to participate and join fall camp until he passes his conditioning test. Yeah, that kind of nugget is something that you probably do latch a little more onto. Now, it's also very obvious, transparent motivation through the media, wouldn't you say? Dee Anderson didn't get where Tommy Moffitt was supposed to leave him, and you're not going to put that on Moffitt. You've heard that man on this program several times over the spring and the summer. If you don't get there, that's on you, guy. And right now, Anderson, a returning wide receiver for this LSU offense, he'll start a little bit behind the learning curve. And I think he was already going to be behind the eight ball when it comes to Jamar Chase, even Terrace Marshall, who's got more of a body type that mimics his, some of the others that have a lot of skill in the slot. But Dee Anderson suspended until he passes his conditioning test. What I do love is this. I love when players are not only in shape, in condition, ready to go. They know your playbook, but they're starting to study those who do the job well at their position above them. And there's a couple of examples of that I wanted to share and some good nuggets that came out of the Baton Rouge media contingent and both of them on the offensive side of the football. But Stephon Sullivan mentioned that he graduated. Pretty impressive story on the young man as well. He told reporters that he's really bought into playing tight end, right? He was kind of that fusion, wide out, tight end, did a little bit of both last year for Steve Ensminger. He's bought in to being a tight end all in because of Joe Brady's offense, he told the media in Baton Rouge. And he also said that he's been watching a lot of Jimmy Graham film. Everybody here in Who Dat Nation will say hopefully it was like, you know, 2014 and prior Jimmy Graham, and that joke will be well received. Well, actually, it's probably the truth. But you got to like that. A guy that just kind of has that body type. And Sullivan was a heck of a basketball player in high school. He's watching Jimmy Graham film. We heard the same thing. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, running back, said, look, I'm now playing in this offense where Joe Brady is helping gear the passing game a little differently. Why wouldn't I be watching Alvin Kamara? Now, do any of us pretend that he's going to be the next AK-41? That's a lot to put on anyone in terms of expectations. But it is the right role model to watch and to kind of pattern your game after. So I love those kind of tidbits that come out. A few other things that I'll make note of. Chaseaw Thornton were running as the first team outside linebackers yesterday. Andre Anthony, Trevez Moore running with the number twos at that position. And when reporters caught up with Chaseaw after the opening practice on Friday, this is something else I like. It's good that you are watching film, not just of your team, your opponents, but those that play the position above you. It's awesome when you're doing the math as well. And I'll give the credit to LSU basketball coach Will Wade. When I watched him at the Tiger Tour here in Lafayette 2 years back, right after he was hired, one of the first things he said, and he repeats it, what gets measured gets done. Let me tell you about the math that Chaseaw's been putting in. And yeah, the man's been doing those digits. 40 to 45 plays a game is what he said. That's what I'll be playing. All it takes is 1.5 sacks a game over the course of a regular season. I'll get to 18, he said, and then boom. Or I guess maybe like Emerald style. Bam! There's 18. And that would be a single season record for LSU. So you've got some guys that are doing some film study in the offseason. You need that. You got guys that are measuring it, trying to do it, and you need that too. What's going to happen, especially in week two with Texas and beyond, and a lot more that'll be determined over the coming weeks. CD, not quite as much. You and I talked about this leading into the show. Not quite as much that comes out of Raging Cajun's camp. And Billy Napier runs that thing very Saban-esque. Loose lips, sink ships. They're real tight in Lafayette.
Exactly. Everything's been pretty low-key. Nobody truly standing out. The only one that was mentioned was a New Iberia product. Zion Hill, he definitely was one that Billy Napier didn't mind pointing out. But, it, of course, it was all about the team as a whole. He's in year two, one of the big mottos that we heard about last week was all about togetherness, and we're starting to see that be a big thing where it's not talking about just one player. It's the entire team looking better in year number two.
Three things I want to see from Cajun's camp. That togetherness you mentioned, right? Chemistry, yep. Cohesion. Yes, you need that. Number two, defense. How are they going to be different and more disruptive up front in year two under Ron Roberts? And Zion Hill's an important cog in that defensive front. But I really want to see Joe Dillon. And as much as Chaseaw coming back from injury is a big deal, on the eastern side of the basin, on this side, yeah. Joe Dillon, if he can return to any semblance of his form from early in his career during the Hudspeth era, look out. You can Katie bar the door. And the third thing that I want to see, like everybody, what's going on at quarterback. Levi Lewis, you're not going to look at him and say, okay, that's, you know, just stature-wise, hey, that's got to be the starting quarterback, right? He looks like he broke the mold. No, he's kind of short. And, yeah, he's a little bit on the skinny side. I know they've been putting some pounds on him. I know that he's been doing a lot more mental reps as well. Those are some of the things we'll continue to monitor as Cajun's camp progresses. All right, the full 3-hour Monty today. And I think we've got a superb list of guests for you. On the other side of this break, Astros threw a collective no-no on Saturday. Brian McTaggart, MLB.com, talking about those white-hot Houston Astros and just what they're going to do next with Zach Greinke in the fold. Brian McTaggart coming your way in less than 5 minutes. Our only scheduled guest of hour number one, Ruffin Rodrigue. At 5:15, we'll talk a lot of LSU, maybe a little Saints as well. At straight up 6 o'clock, I made reference to new number 18s. We're going to get one of my favorite number 18s on the program. At 6 o'clock, Brandon Taylor, former LSU safety, will join us. And then at 6:30, all in on prep football. James Buehr's top quarterbacks, top running backs in the area, and a bit of a preview for District 3-5A and the newly formed 5-4A. We're busy today, so stick with us. Bumper to Bumper Sports, we'll be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
More of your 4 o'clock hour coming directly. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. And from Lafayette, let's take our show on the road west to Houston, Texas. Aboard the ARDCO Equipment Hotline, Brian McTaggart, MLB.com. How are you, Brian?
Doing well. How you doing out there, Louisiana?
Everybody's doing well here. A lot more fired up after the collective no-hitter on Saturday. Six innings from new pitcher Aaron Sanchez, followed by Will Harris, Joe Biagini, and Chris Devinsky. Just how unique and awesome was that from your perspective?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I mean, pitchers, you know, you still had some space going.
Hey, we'll see, Clint. Let's see if we can't get him back aboard. Do want to catch a couple of different items there with Brian, so let's make sure that we can patch him through as best as possible. The fact that two out of those four pitchers that I just mentioned, Sanchez, Biagini, new to the team, it's incredible. And Sanchez, again, the peripheral numbers weren't bad, but coming over from the Blue Jays, I believe he was 3-14, if I'm not mistaken, on the season leading into that start. And so we saw this a few weeks back. The Angels got this done as they were commemorating Tyler Skaggs. They had a collective no-hitter, but they did that kind of with an intentional opener type of setup. This wasn't done in the same fashion, but it's still awfully cool to watch. So we'll see if we can't get Brian McTaggart back. Do want to talk collective no-hitter and then get to Yordan Alvarez as well. He's doing some pretty special things. Brian, we lost you for a moment, but the collective no-hitter.
Yeah, it was definitely a pretty neat night. Just off the heels of the trade, I don't think anybody knew what to expect from Sanchez. And then when he went out there and pitched the six no-hit innings, I mean, you know, even though A.J. Hinch was going to his bullpen, you still didn't think that, you know, three guys were going to come in and not give up a hit. But when Devinsky took the mound in the ninth inning, you know, there was a buzz in the ballpark and you know, a chance to see a combined no-hitter, which I had never seen one before. I mean, I've seen a perfect game and a regular no-hitter, but I think it's pretty unique that, you know, four guys take the mound and no one give up a hit. It was pretty cool for sure.
I know that players don't talk about it while it's happening, Brian. I had several friends that were at the ball game. They wouldn't allow their wives to talk about it because they didn't understand what was going on. And when they tried to explain it to their wives, they said, just give it a few innings and I'll tell you. Do reporters talk about it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think even though it kind of opens us up to the fans coming at us a little bit, I mean, once a no-hitter gets to the fifth inning, I tweeted out, you know, Astros are pitching a no-hitter after the fifth inning, and, you know, everybody's coming down on me on Twitter for jinxing it and all that, but it's not there. I mean, I'm a reporter, so maybe there's somebody sitting at home, it's not, you know, watching the game, but now they have an opportunity to turn on the TV and watch it or turn on the radio or whatever. So I'm always pretty transparent with what's going on. And, you know, everyone's accusing me of jinxing it. But, hey, I didn't jinx it. They got the no-hitter. So I have no jinxing powers.
That's right. Got the job done. Brian McTaggart of MLB.com, our guest on 103.7 The Game. All right, with Yordan Alvarez, Brian, I think we all expected the power. But this man currently ranks third in the bigs in OPS since his debut. How is he this well-rounded so early?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's really taken a big jump quickly. You know, we heard when he was in the minor leagues early in the year that he was a disciplined hitter, had great strike zone judgment, pace. And yeah, that's the minor leagues. Let's see what he does in the big leagues. Well, he's doing the exact same thing. And, you know, I certainly think he's put himself in the front running as the front runner for the rookie of the year. I mean, he's got to post some more numbers, but I think he's going to get there eventually. But, you know, he's amazing. He draws his walks. He's very calm in the box. He doesn't get excited. Doesn't seem like this any moment is too big for him. And, you know, look at yesterday. He fouls the ball off his knee. And, I mean, he's down on the ground for 2 or 3 minutes. It takes him another 2 or 3 to get back to get the trainers off the field and sort of he hits a 400-foot sack fly basically using his arms. He didn't even use his lower body. He's just so strong. I mean, the ball flies off his bat like nobody I've really ever seen before. I mean, it just it seems like when he hits these long home runs, like he hit one the other night to the opposite field, the ball's still on the way up. He just he's so strong and so effortless. I mean, when he comes to bat, you just have to sit up and watch. You just don't know what's going to happen.
A lot of people looking forward to the debut tomorrow night as the Houston Astros welcome in the Colorado Rockies. Zach Greinke takes the mound. I guess your expectations and just how excited he is. We know the reception from the team and the fans is great, but how about him for coming over to Houston?
Well, it's kind of hard to say. I mean, Zach is a little bit of a different guy, and we heard that coming in. He didn't really show much emotion when we had a little chance to talk to him in the press conference room. He did say he thinks this is the best team he's ever been on. He's been on six different teams now, so he's been on some good teams, some good Dodgers teams, some good Brewers teams. So he's been in the league a while, but he thinks this is the best team he's been on, which says a lot. If he's excited, he didn't show it, but I think that's sort of the way he is. He's very even keeled. Doesn't show a lot of emotion out there like, you know, you might see from Gerrit Cole or Verlander or some of the other guys. But, yeah, I'm going to be interested to see, you know, how he does against the Rockies, a team that he's very familiar with. I think he's already faced them four or five times this year in the National League West. And, of course, when he was with the Dodgers, he faced them a lot, too. So the Astros have been getting great starting pitching the last 2.5, 3 weeks. It's just been one tremendous start after the other. So he's got a chance to fall right in line.
Astros are now 33 games above 500. They've won 4 in a row and 8 of 10. How does this influx of pitching change maybe who can afford to be moved to the bullpen, Brian?
Yeah, well, I certainly think if you look at the five starters they have now, Verlander, Cole, Miley, Greinke, and Aaron Sanchez, that Brad Peacock, when he comes back healthy, which could be this week, he's destined for the bullpen. And I think once the playoffs start, you look at this. Right now they have three relievers on the IL with Peacock, Brian Presley, who could be back soon, and Josh James. So I think all those guys have a real good shot to be on the playoff roster. So they're going to have some tough decisions to make as far as the playoff roster goes. But they've, you know, they've built some depth here by adding Biagini, and he's a lock for the playoff roster. Now you have Sanchez could be in your bullpen. So, you know, the bullpen was weak and all there for a couple of weeks. But, you know, with this trade and getting guys back healthy, they've built a little bit of depth. And there's going to be some guys left off the playoff roster that aren't going to be happy. We saw that last year in the first round of the playoffs when Joe Smith and Hector Rondon got left off, and a couple of years ago when Chad Qualls got left off. It's just the way it is. And, you know, they can always change the playoff roster if they win and go to the ALCS. But, you know, they certainly have a lot of options. It's going to depend on the matchup and who's pitching well at that time and things like that.
We're finishing up with Brian McTaggart on 103.7 The Game. How do you remark upon, I guess, the future of this farm system, after they got rid of a couple of top prospects to get Greinke? What's left in the cabinet, and what kind of comes next?
Well, yeah, they've taken a big hit. I mean, losing three of the top five prospects, you know, that's a pretty big blow, plus, you know, the injuries to, Forrest Whitley to set them back a little bit, and Alvarez at the beginning of the year was in their rankings. He's in the big leagues now, so I think for the first time really since, you know, Jeff Luhnow started to rebuild this, that they have a farm system that I think most people will agree is probably the bottom half of the big leagues as far as the depth of the talent. But that's not to say that, you know, they can't restock some guys in a couple of years. I mean, they've made a lot of trades the last few years and dealt out a lot of prospects. Most prospects don't hit. You just never know. I mean, who have the Astros dealt away that you thought, wow, they really need to have that guy back? Nobody yet. So, and you know, Verlander paid off with the World Series, and they're hoping that the Greinke will do the same. But there's no doubt they need to do a little bit of restocking here in the next couple of years to get them back to the point to where they can have some talent coming up or start trading some of these guys away again.
Brian, as always, thanks for the time. We look forward to following your coverage at MLB.com.
All right, thanks for having me.
Brian McTaggart kind of soldiered through there. We appreciate that. Not the best cell reception, so thank you for making it through with this as well. But I think some pretty well-made points there for Brian, right? Bottom half of the league with the farm system, but then again, who has escaped so far that makes you jealous or makes you upset that you discarded him? I wouldn't say anybody either, so I agree with him there. When I saw that stat on Yordan Alvarez that I threw out, it blew my mind. So I had to ask him, but third in Major League Baseball in OPS. Yeah, I think they're helping him out by the fact that the kid hardly ever has to play in the field, right? If you could DH, just focus on that, that's a good start. And we'll see exactly if that's his position of the future moving forward with this franchise. Right now, you couldn't force me to move him out of that spot. He has been absolutely brilliant. And I'll give a shout-out as well. Clint, this is like the opposite of a Sports Illustrated jinx type of situation. Who guest-hosted my show on Thursday?
That's our guy, Blaine.
Did you know that Blaine was at the game on Saturday?
Yeah. Oh, trust me. I knew about that all too well. That's why he wasn't able to host on Friday, correct?
Did we do anything to maybe facilitate that, or is that just me dreaming here from the 237 Roof Studios?
I think you might be dreaming a little bit, but, you know, okay. Again, you know, it might be the reverse of Ben Love. Because
the show that gets results.
The show that gets results, and whenever Blaine's at an Astros game, he sees a combined no-no. When you're there, usually somebody gets injured.
You know, one time George Springer comes up a little bit limp and ginger with his back, and I catch all kind of guff from you. For what it's worth, I've been on a nice little heater lately. The games I've been going to, these teams have been winning. The Braves did not win the Friday game I was at. Joey Votto, like 138 years old of him, terrorized them. Alex Wood, a former Braves pitcher for the Reds, terrorized them. I didn't go to the game Saturday. This is the most random. We'll head into a break with this. This is the most random pitching matchup of all time, considering who they were pitching for. Reds at Braves Saturday night. I watched it with all my ATLian friends that were there. Dallas Keuchel versus Trevor Bauer. Braves, Reds.
Yeah, that's a weird one.
You're getting the Vince Lombardi out of me for that. What the hell is going on out here?
Yes.
That's an AL matchup like 14 seconds ago. Reds, Braves. Okay, fine. Whatever you say. We'll be right back in. Time to go sink or swim and then let you decide. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
When the sand gets hot, you gotta move fast, like a dog chasing a frisbee. Move just as fast to the Ford Hurry Up and Save sales event. Because for the first time ever, you can get 20% estimated savings on select Ford vehicles. Plus, earn complimentary maintenance through Ford Pass Rewards. Don't let this hot deal on America's best-selling brand pass you by. Get into the Ford Hurry Up and Save sales event. Based on 2010 through 2018 calendar year sales. Moda must be activated within 60 days of purchase through the Ford Pass app on a smartphone and remain active for at least 6 months after activation. Eligible on select 2019 model year vehicles. Vehicle must have arrived at dealer at least 61 days prior to the sale date. Estimated savings include an average dealer discount based on a sales survey of average discounts offered by Ford dealers nationally. Discount may vary. Dealer determines price. For all offers, take new retail delivery from an authorized Ford dealer stock by 9/3/19. See participating dealer for complete details.
This Thursday, excited to get back out to the Taproom River Ranch. Blaine Viator is allowed to join, but he can't host anymore. Okay, I think. But we will be there from 4 until 7 p.m. Come and check us out if you get a chance. We always welcome you into the weekend early at the Taproom River Ranch. They've got more than 40 beers that are on tap. They've got the wings with the swing sauce, the best flatbread in town. Plus, you can come see me and then Blaine starting at 6 o'clock. And it's always on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station. And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game. Live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
The number 18, an awfully big deal with LSU football. In fact, the best tradition going, at least in this millennium, for the program. Want to discuss that and then get your take on the new number 18s. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we are back in on 103.7 The Game. We know that it started with Matt Mauch, 2001 to 03. That last year, Mauch and Company ended, oh, no big deal, right? Just a, let's see here, haven't done this math in a while, 45-year drought, right? Or national championships for the program. So Yeah, I think that was something that needed to be celebrated. And then from 04 to 07, Jacob Hester donned the number 18. Hester, certainly no stranger to listeners on the program. He's been with us before. Richard Dixon had it playing tight end 2008 to 2009. Richard Murphy had it at the running back position in 2010. Brandon Taylor at safety had it in 2011 for LSU's magical 13-0 season before getting to New Orleans to play Alabama. Don't forget, Brandon Taylor will join our show today at straight up 6 o'clock. And from there, Benny Logan along the defensive line, probably the weirdest proportions that a body has put on that 18 jersey. Logan, of course, a beast that continues to excel in the National Football League. Lamine Barrow had it at linebacker 2013. Terrence McGee, running back 14. Tre'Davious White, two-year number 18 donner, 2015 and 2016. And then they started to do it, CD, on both sides of the football. In 2017, they split it. Christian Lacouture had it, Benny Logan style on the D-line. J.D. Moore had it in the LSU backfield. Last year, of course, Foster Morrow. So for the second time ever, we've got dual 18s. Offensively, it's Lloyd Cushenberry. He's the first offensive lineman to have it. He can't wear it on his jersey, but he's going to have an 18 patch next to that number 79. On defense, it's Kalavon Chaisaw. Now you've got the lineage. Now you've got the facts. It's time for the opinions. This is where you get the chance to shine. After the music, I'll get to the question.
Love, exciting and new.
Your Sink or Swim question of the day. Did LSU get it right with the number 18 jersey assignments? Don't make us wait on you. Let's get active. 706-0111. CD, I've been gone for 2 days, so I'm going to be selfish as I'll get out. I'm running first. I'm going to swim. They got it right, but they didn't do what I thought they would. I thought they'd go Joe Burrow. And part of the rub there, if you will, is that Burrow didn't start with the program, that he was a transfer, that he's not a Louisiana guy. And if you look back at just about everybody I rattled off there, what, with the exception of Mauch, just top of the dome, I can't think of too many of those guys I just said that didn't hail from Louisiana. Certainly Taylor did. Certainly Hester did. Certainly Logan did. Lacouture didn't as well. I guess that'd be another. But a lot of these guys, Foster Morrow, Richard Dixon, well, he's Mississippi. So now I got myself confusing me. That's tough. But still, I didn't know if they were going to give it to a transfer, and ultimately they didn't. They gave it to Cushenberry, a guy that went to SEC Media Day, somebody that's well-respected on the team. I get that, and it's interesting that they finally broke through with one of the guys along the offensive line. I remember back in the day wondering if Lyle Collins wouldn't get it, returning for the senior season. Always said they couldn't for the old lineman. Well, now they found a way how. Chaisaw. Well, it's got to be all about perseverance, right? Certainly there's talent and there's upside, but this has to be about coming through an injury. And what Chaisaw is attempting to do reminds me in some ways of what Quan Alexander successfully did do at LSU. And so, look, I'm not going to argue against these picks. I'll swim. I think they got it right, but again, I am a little surprised they didn't go maybe with kind of the Rocky Four, the easy way out. No shortcuts home. By giving it to Joe Burrow, they went a different direction. CD, your take.
First off, well done, Rocky IV reference, Ben.
Thank you.
But going back to the main topic, I think without a doubt, you got to say this was the right choice, largely because of the fact that I think Ed Orgeron did this because of the fact, you think about it, what was the biggest bugaboo for LSU last year? Your offensive line, your defensive line. The battles are won and lost between the trenches. These two guys definitely deserve to be given the number 18, largely because of the fact they're on two of the positions that Coach O expects to see improve a lot, and these two guys are going to be key cogs in this offensive line and defensive line, respectively. And I think, especially in the case of Kalavon Chaisaw, he's going to be a force to be reckoned with, I think, this year.
Yeah, you say Chaisaw, I say Chaisaw. We'll mix it up and do it the other way later in the show. The guy that was number 4, now he's number 18.
Yes.
Yeah, that guy. You know, what's interesting here, not just kind of that easy way out. They could have given it to Burrow, who's clearly a leader on the team, right? He doesn't just play a position of leadership. Dude is a straight-up baller and a leader, and he's followed, right? I thought that that was one of the easy ways that they could have gone. I think some of the others that people kind of threw around is, I mean, you look at Michael Divinity, right? I mean, just another veteran, front seven player, somebody who hails from the New Orleans area. I think he commands a lot of attention on the defense as well. So I thought that there was a chance there. Jacob Phillips is a guy who I think might be one of their two or three best players, all positions included. So, yeah, I mean, just like you had four guys from this linebacking core that got mentioned as, what, Butkus Award watch list guys, a lot of those linebackers could have fit the 18 mold. And that's a route that LSU's gone a few times, as I just explained with this tradition. Quarterback usually makes the most sense. But again, this was a transfer. And maybe Burrow, I'm sure he would have accepted it if it was sent his way. But I don't know, in a weird way, I kind of like the fact that he didn't go out and ask for this. And at least we don't know that he did, but I would bet that if he asked for it, they'd have given it to him. Last year, there was a player who asked for number 7. I'm not, never again. I'm not about that. 7 and 18 are very different. 18's a leader and a good player. Number 7 is the baddest motor scooter on your team, period. First-round draft pick coming. So Grant Delpit needs the strap on a 7. Last year's number 7 situation, doesn't need to be repeated. So by and large, I think that they got the right guys for this one. It's interesting that they went O-line for the first time, and I totally get why they went Chase on. That doesn't need a lot of explanation to me. Perseverance, talent, upside, commands a ton of attention and respect. So I get that one. All right, no takers so far. I leave the program for 2 days and you go crickets on me. I see how it is. We'll come right back in. We've got some more real estate for you. Otherwise, we're going to let you hear from Coach O, some of his sound from over the weekend, and Billy Napier from earlier today. We took a brief break to talk some Astros to Brian McTaggart, but by and large, it's the fifth day of August. It's football season, and we're talking fall camp. You're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
Let's get back to more of Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports, where we practically wrote the rules of football on 103.7 The Game.
Clint, maybe one day we'll rewrite the rules of football. 4:45, back in with more of the good stuff. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports live on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, and online at 103.7thegame.com. We put a question out there on the line. Did LSU get it right with the number 18 jersey assignments? We've got some time for you to weigh in. The number is 706-0111. CD, who do we have aboard now?
We got Doc on the line.
Let's find him on the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Doc, none of the normal rigmarole. I know that you're tuned into sports all the time. I respect it. I'm glad to have you back.
Yeah, glad to be back. Glad to have you back as well. I think I'm going to swim with, I think, caution, just because I think what he's trying to do here is he's trying to call out people and see, you know, who's going to step up. And I think that, you know, if you're looking at, I guess, are these really leaders on the team? I mean, you know, you're kind of looking for them to be, you're looking for the men to say, you know what, I'm going to take charge here. I don't know.
Is he challenging them to be better leaders or better players? Is it kind of one and the same? What do you think?
Yeah, and then from that standpoint, I mean, is that really what you want to make for number 18? Hester was just that's basically, you know, Mark came in and he stood up. You know, he led the team. He took charge. Hester did the same thing. You know, I think Foster Morrow didn't. He was a stand-up guy, but maybe it was his position.
But it's a good way of looking at it. Doc, you know, I appreciate the call. Thank you, man.
Yep.
It's a great way of looking at it and a very distinct possibility, right? The idea that this is used motivationally. Now, let me go back to the same well that I was dipping in the last segment. And if you think I'm reiterating this too much, I don't really care. It needs emphasis. You can't use number seven for motivational purposes. You're either Grant Delpit, you're either Leonard Fournette, you're either, you know, keep going down the line, just some of these, Patrick Peterson. You're either those guys or you're not. You can't be made into number seven. To Doc's point, perhaps with a little bit of a nudging, you can be made into exactly what LSU needs out of number 18. So that's not a bad thought at all. Some motivation there. And guys that you know are very good, maybe even great players. And I think we all can admit, this time last year, I mean, I'll say it out loud, I thought Chaisson was going to be an absolute freak. I mean, Arden Key 2.0. How does he come back from a knee injury? We're going to find out. But as a leader, we're going to learn some things about him as well. So, Doc, that's not bad at all. The idea that these guys are starters, they're well respected, you believe they're going to produce, but can you squeeze maybe a little more out of them from a leadership standpoint by doing this? Not a bad thought. All right, we'll take some more. 706-0111. CD doing a lot of yapping on the other side. I'm wondering if those are people enrolling in the fantasy league or if those are people who have sink or swim answers. I guess when I find out, you'll find out. I think that, going back to the question at hand, I think that Chaisson is the one that makes more sense to me, or I could have seen that coming before Friday night. That one wouldn't have shocked me. I was a little taken off guard by Cushenberry, but then I thought more about it. I mean, the kid's from not too far down the road from Baton Rouge, right? So he's local, and I think you're seeing on the LSU basketball side how much that means. If you don't think Will Wade and company are leaning on the impact, not just from a productivity standpoint, because we all probably can recognize that Naz Reid and Trey Waters were the best players on the team, and neither was from Louisiana. But they leaned a lot on Javonte Smart. They leaned a lot on Skylar Mays. These kids that are from Baton Rouge, it means something. I think we're seeing that maybe a little on the football side as well. All right, enough of me. Let's get some more of you. Aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, Little Johnny, it's been a while. Great to hear from you, man. How are you today?
Oh, fantastic, Ben. It seemed like you're struggling for topics, but I'm glad you brought up the LSU basketball, because I'm just trying to figure out when they're going to fire Will Wade.
I don't know. Hasn't happened yet. Their hand hasn't been forced on it.
You were all over that here when all the drama was taking place. You said for sure they was going to fire the man. I won't know when it's going to happen.
You're hot on that topic, I could tell. Last time you called me, it was the same thing. I'll tell you this. I don't think it's anywhere near over, but you notice I don't bring it up on the show a ton, right?
You're right. All right, man, I just called to give you a hard time.
Nah, I'm with that, and I can take that. I appreciate it, Little Johnny. Yeah, I know. I remember being at the tap room and getting the same thing. Probably about 6, maybe 5 months ago from Little Johnny. It's not coincidental that Scott Woodward is the AD, that he's got a great relationship with Mark Emmert, and it's not coincidental, as Glenn Gilbo pointed out, that Scott Woodward gets an extension if he has to fire a head coach who did something wrong before he got there. Just going to leave all that right there, and you can take that and do with it what you will. But this is football season. I'll try to keep it about football. And we'll take more of your calls. 706-0111, number 18. Did they get the right guy? Let us know. But we'll let you hear from Coach O while we've got some time here. And speaking of having two number 18s, one offense, one defense, Ogeron goes off on, well, why they did that.
Well, it was very close. You know, there was a lot of guys that were considered, and but you know, I lean on Jack Marucci. You know, just on the field and off the field, all the things that they do, and we thought those guys were great representatives. And I tried to give you all a little hint yesterday. I told you I had to put the number on the jersey. Y'all didn't know what I was talking about. We can't put a lineman in 18, so we had to put 18. That's what I was talking about, and then. Obviously, Kittleman has done a tremendous job. He's going to represent us well. Houston North Shore School has been very nice. This is a big, big recruiting opportunity for us. So I think he's going to wear it well, and I'm proud of him.
So Doc brought up the fact that maybe this is, you know, a slight nudge to guys that were basically in that type of echelon to get them where they needed to be. Well, there's the other part of it, not just for Doc's edification, but all of ours. Recruiting, right? The kid from North Shore High School in Houston, yeah, it's a hotbed. They're not dummies. They know what they're doing. Let's get more from Ogeron. We'll move away from the number 18 for the time being. I remember it was a big topic of conversation leaving SEC media days, Ed being more involved with coaching the defensive line. And maybe there was something that was lost in translation. What does he mean there? Is he going to try and be another cook in the kitchen with Dave Aranda? I never really thought so then, and with this soundbite, I lean even more in that direction. But he does want to get involved specifically with the D-line.
I think it helps that I'm more involved with the defensive line. Because now I'm accountable for them stepping wrong. I'm accountable for them not being in the right gap. You know, and all the coaches go through that. But that's why you practice. And we're putting so much in that there's going to be some mistakes. The first week, we don't put as much in. Guys are going to start repeating stuff. That's what camp's about. That's why it takes a while. That's why it takes a while to get ready to play a game.
You know, the other thing I guess that's worth mentioning here is that Dennis Johnson, coaches at the D-line for LSU, injured himself. And from what I read over the weekend, CD is going to be in the box coaching. So maybe that's yet another thing. Is Ed going to be, frantically coaching the D-line during the game? I'm not so sure about that. But it probably doesn't hurt that he'll be more involved during practice.
Exactly. He'll be involved a lot more with practice. I know they have a coach that's going to be there readily available alongside Lockachore, who's going to be coaching as a grad assistant. So they'll have a lot more hands-on approach in the game, out with Ed Ogeron not necessarily dealing with it as much, but definitely in practice, he'll have his hands all over that.
Yeah, let me follow up on that. The report I'm seeing now, Billy Embody, 247 Sports, this happened while I was in Atlanta over the last 4 or 5 days. It was, I guess, leaked that Dennis Johnson, and I know Ed Ogeron expounded on this, but apparently in July, Meatball, former Tiger player, injured both his knees and required surgery on both knees while playing basketball. So that sidelined him for the start of fall camp. It's got him in a wheelchair currently. There's also the fact that LSU has Kaneki Udizi, former USC defensive stud, as an analyst who they brought over, and then Christian Lacouture, former Tiger defensive lineman, as a grad assistant. So I think this might be an all-hands-on-deck type situation.
Exactly, and you brought up Udizi. I think that's the biggest reason why I think O wants to have more of his hands in practice with that, because Udizi is going to be more of your on-the-field defensive line coach, while you brought it up perfectly, Meatball will be up in the box.
Meatball up in the box. Things we didn't think we'd be talking about just a couple of days ago,
yes.
But this is always how it seems to go down. I had a portion of this segment earmarked for Billy Napier, and I wanted to air out some of his sound. So why don't we do this? I'll push that into hour number two. Another topic I have in mind. Little Johnny says we're struggling for him today. Got to throw a little heat back at it. We got Saints, Falcons, and maybe where they stand with NFC powers. Why did this come up for me? Like I said, I spent the last 4 or 5 days in Atlanta. They think they got something special going on, especially after Julio Jones went and one-upped and trumped Michael Thomas on the pay scale. Got me to thinking a little bit. Probably the two best teams in the NFC South. Could they be two of the absolute best in the NFC? Who's got the better chance of playing for the Lombardi Trophy? I want to touch on that as well. Plus, Ruff and Rodrigue, less than 20 minutes from right now. But let's wind down our first hour, CD, as we always do, with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Voice. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Curse. Yeah, Clint put that on me already. He said that the last time I went to watch the Astros, it was a curse or a jinx. George Springer ended up going down for a couple of weeks, tweaked his back. Our guy Blaine Viator goes over to Minute Maid Park. I had a couple of other friends that were there Saturday as well, and they throw the collective no-no. While yours truly was in Atlanta, and the Braves were losing 5-2 to the Reds. I guess these things, they just happen. But it's a lot of fun to get out to Major League Baseball games. So glad I got a chance to, and glad you get to listen to them all the time here on Acadiana Sports Station. And the Astros will be right back taking on the Rockies tomorrow night. Zach Greinke on the mound. That's like the opposite of a curse. That's a blessing. And that is the final word of this hour. It's brought to you by the Village Station. We'll be right back in more Bumper to Bumper Sports coming your way on 103.7.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crone Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour two of three underway. Ben Love, joined by the famous Clint D, and this is Bumper to Bumper Sports for the next 2 hours, taking you home on 103.7 The Game. College football heavy in hour number one. Touched on the Stros, their combined no-no, Yordan Alvarez and his power as well. To begin our program, we'll get back to college football. I do have some Billy Napier sound I want to roll out for you, but let's get to the NFL. And I had my experience in Atlanta, kind of my last recharging of the batteries before football season. Friday nights, getting after on the high school ranks. I'm ready for it. I think you are too. But I got to recharge the batteries. I did it in Atlanta, and I did it amongst people who are just absolute bat bleep crazy Atlanta Falcons fans. And the belief there is strong. And so here's kind of where it moved me toward the idea that I think along with the Rams, I would say the Chicago Bears. Some of you might say, but I would probably disagree with the Cowboys. Certainly you would put the Saints, and I do think the Falcons up there in the upper echelon in the NFC. But in this NFC power struggle, who do you like? And how do you think the Saints and the Falcons compare to one another? It was a Thanksgiving Day battle, or really a Thanksgiving night battle last year, CD, in New Orleans. If memory serves, they're going to run that back, but this time in Atlanta on Thanksgiving.
Correctamundo.
And that was another deep conversation I had with some of the cats over there. I would love it if the Saints became the number three guaranteed team every Thanksgiving Thursday. We know we're getting the Cowboys. We know we're getting the Lions. Yay. The Saints playing on Thanksgiving Thursday every year is something I can get used to. Whether or not they're kind of a ratings dynamo after Breeze retires and there's still that level of team remains to be seen. But this tradition is one I can get behind. Even better if it's the Falcons.
Exactly. I think that's the only way you can wind up doing it, because I feel like if you have it be Saints-Falcons every single year, it's going to wind up being entertaining. Probably this is just me talking. That's a 1, but a 1A would probably wind up being Saints-Rams, mainly because of the old NFC West rivalry ties.
Maybe. Feels like that's a bit prisoner of the moment type speak, because I think that Saints-49ers is a better old-school NFC West type of matchup. I see where you're heading with that. Love that it's on Thanksgiving again. Love that the hate between these two is so immensely strong. We know what it's like from this end, right? The 28-3 jokes just never end, nor should they. But I could tell you that from Atlanta, the strong hate exists as well. And it comes back down 85 to 65, and then sits in traffic for a while on 10, and then makes its way to New Orleans. Just trust me that it comes back in that direction. And I think I'm at a point where I believe the Saints are the best team in the NFC. I could see where the Falcons are in the top three or four. And I do think that this becomes a bit of a bounce-back year for the Dirty Birds. I think at running back, they've got a chance to be not as dynamic as the Saints, but maybe a little bit more well-rounded. I think that Ridley has really just scratched the surface of what he can be as a number two receiver next to Julio Jones, who now has to be happy with all the money that he's making. And Debo Jones coming back healthy, he is the Falcons' version of DeMario Davis, is the best way I know how to put that. That makes him pretty darn important. I like the Saints' overall roster better, their body of work, if you will. But I could see where the Falcons are going to be awfully good this year. So, you know, ultimately, what I'm wondering aloud, call it a sink or swim question part due. Any chance that would be an NFC title game this year, Clint? Could you see it being those two because I have some thoughts on the other NFC contenders that I kind of just rattled off. They've all got some fleas on them, and the Falcons do too, to be certain. But I think there's a chance. I mean, mathematically, does that even work out, right? If one of them is a wild card, if the record's good enough, could it happen? You'd have to have some upsets in the playoffs, so I get that part of it. But I think these could be two of the absolute best teams in the NFC this year. I would love to see them matched up in the NFC title game. That amount of hatred with the Super Bowl on the line, I know it's the fifth day of August. It's the first show I've been a part of in the month of August, and we're talking mid to late January stuff here. I'd pay money for that.
I think we'd all pay money for that, Ben, and it just feels like it's tough. You brought it up perfectly because one of these teams has to be the wild card, and odds are, like, regardless of who it is, that wild card, that probably be the higher-seeded one. So if I'm, again, this is just right now, I'm not necessarily looking at how the bracket's set up, but if I'm not mistaken, doesn't the higher seed play the one seed, or is that the other way around? Am I, if you, after the wild card game, you play that?
The worst seed left plays the one on a bye.
There we
go. Better seed left plays the two that's on a bye. So it can work out a lot of different ways. That's the reason we can't completely map this out right now. But just hypothetically, are they the best two teams in the NFC? Maybe not quite. That might be a little bit of disrespect to the Rams. And I'm not a very, very big Jared Goff guy. In fact, I had this conversation with Falcons peeps over the weekend as well. You know who Jared Goff is to me?
Who's that?
A slightly newer age Joe Flacco.
Okay, I can get behind that. I think a lot of it has to do with Todd Gurley and the usage he has. Because if his knee isn't necessarily 100%, I feel like the Rams could be dropping off a little bit.
And there's no question, when he went down in the postseason, I know he played in that Saints NFC title game, but they were relying on CJ, I mean, Fat Stick Anderson.
Yes.
I mean, come on. That team with the healthy Gurley would have been a different story in the Saints game and then even maybe in the Super Bowl. But still, if you're going to have to rely on a quarterback to win it all, and so many times that happens in the NFL, the Flaccos, the Dilfers, those are fewer and farther between moments. I don't know that I expect the Rams to be quite as good this year as they were last. For that matter, I expect some regression on the Chiefs' behalf, on the AFC side. I don't know that I expect individual regression from Mahomes, but as a team, I'm not sure they're as good. LSU fans that are loving the Honey Badger being part of the Chiefs, not throwing pre-shade, not hating, it's kind of how I feel. I don't see the Rams or the Chiefs being quite as good this year as they were last year. But I look in the NFC, a lot of respect for the Bears. Their team is built a little bit differently. I think Mitchell Trubisky might be slightly on the incline, whereas Goff, as great as he was for the first half of last year, I think some of his deficiencies, some of his lesser thans were exposed. And I think some teams were able to figure out how to at least somewhat marginalize the Rams' offense. To be fair, down the stretch of the regular season, some defenses found a way to at least relatively marginalize the Saints' offense. So I'm looking at it this year, and I see about three or four teams that leap to the front. Hard for me to give that complete vote of confidence to the Cowboys. I would say ditto with the Eagles, the Vikings with Cousins, I'm just not quite there at this point. The Packers, I mean, wow, so many of those targets are gone. I looked up at a fantasy rankings over the weekend, CD, and Devontae Adams is a lot of people's like number two wide receiver, and I said, man, I know he's good, but how did that happen? Oh, everybody else is gone. Jordy Nelson like retired over the weekend and spent last year in Oakland. Oh, I mean, Cobb is gone now, playing for the Cowboys. Like, oh, everybody's gone. You know, even Jimmy Graham was there for a while, now he's not. Jared Cook was there for a while, now he's not. Like, everybody's bleeping gone. They got, like, Montgomery playing running back for that team, and he's a wide receiver. So I look at the NFC. I love the Saints' chances of getting back to where they were last year and taking a step forward if the chips fall right and they're healthy. I'm just wondering if Atlanta might not be the biggest challenger, and not just in the division, but even further than that. All right, we got to take our first break of hour number two. We're going to get with Ruff and Rodri on the other side. Then we throw some shade, and we will get to some of that Billy Napier sound in hour number two. Raging Cajun football fans, I promise you that. B2BS today brought to you in large part by Relief Windows. Think windows, doors, and siding in Acadiana. You need to think Relief Windows. Go to the website, relief windows.com. Bumperbumpersports.com. We'll be right back in, bringing Ruffin with us. You're listening to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Raymond Parsons III here to remind you to tune in to...
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
A kick in the head every Monday at 5:15. Welcome back in. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Ruff and Roderick with us per the huge. Ruff and fired up to kick off August with you. I can't believe how close we are to football.
It is right there. The picture in the Advocate this morning with Caleb on Sesso, with his body, you know, with his 3% body fat or whatever it is. You know, reminds me when Jarvis Green came in as a freshman. They showed him they took a picture of him and everybody freaked out. But it is. It's a lot of fun, and it's here. You know, I took my son to see Kevin Mawai, my former teammate, get inducted to the Hall of Fame this weekend, and they had a game, you know, the inaugural game, and all the players there. Just it was a fantastic setting.
So much to touch on in this interview, but let's go to everything that happened in Canton. What was that like for you and your son? And I mean, not only to watch, as you mentioned, Kevin Mawai, but Ed Reed from down the road in Destrehan, that had to be special.
Yeah, you know, when I went, I went for Kevin. Kevin, he was a freshman when I was a senior, and we actually got closer through the restaurant later on. But he was a skinny little kid from Leesville who just worked harder than everybody. And he's one of the greatest centers of all time. And it was so special. He had one of the best speeches I've ever heard. Johnny Robinson, who Ed Reed even said, why isn't he in this thing with his numbers? And to have three guys from, you know, Louisiana and one of them being my teammates. And, you know, Kevin had all the kind of a special moment. He had all his former teammates. He asked everybody to stand up. And we did, you know, and it was a pretty special moment. Kevin was such a team player and a great guy, and he's gonna be a special coach too. So look out for him on the coaching scene. But having Franco Harris and Mean Joe Green and, you know, my son and his best friend went, and they were wearing their Drew Brees and Michael Thomas jerseys for the festivities. And Ed Reed was going by in the parade, and he yelled out "Who Dat" to my son, which I thought was kind of cool. And he's a real good guy. Everybody there is just—they're just happy to be in the Hall of Fame. It's such a special honor, and everybody's in good mood, and it's just a special day.
Well, if they can get your son and the rest of us to buy a few more Michael Thomas jerseys, they'll be that much closer, Ruffin, to paying off that $61 million guaranteed.
And that came up a lot because my son was wearing a Michael Thomas jersey. They said, the $100 million man. I went, yeah, he's going to hold it for a little while until Julio signs.
Yeah, no, that definitely didn't take very long. Ruffin Roderick, our guest on 103.7 The Game. Okay, you mentioned Caleb Van Chassel as well. The assignment of number 18 to not only him, but Lloyd Cushenberry, an offensive lineman who'll wear the patch. I guess your reaction to both.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad that Coach Ogeron figured out that, you know, you can give it to an offensive lineman, just have him wear a patch, because previously they had some offensive linemen that were, you know, Lyle Collins. I mean, all these great linemen, offensive linemen that deserve to wear it, but they can't legally. You can't wear anything below 50 as an offensive lineman. So, you know, you're numerically challenged. And, you know, they figured out a way to do it. And it couldn't go to a better guy, Lloyd Cushenberry, a harder worker, and, you know, three-star out of Centimont or Prairieville right there. And just a guy that just outworks everybody. He's smart. And Caleb Vaughn is a freak and a great kid from what I understand. And if he can stay healthy, man, you're talking about maybe breaking a sack record this year. hopefully. So it's a special team.
What do you know about that injury that he suffered, and what it takes to come back from that?
Well, he's so fast, and he's strong. You know, these kids today are just, you know, when you're a 225, 230, 250 pound man, and you run that fast, and you cut on a dime, you know, your body, your ligaments are as strong as anybody else. You know, your muscles are strong. So you see these guys who just physically just specimens that blow their knees out because of the strength and the force going to on their ligaments. And he, you know, on that turf when he cut on that turf, it popped. It snapped. And, you know, he doesn't have – so Kalavon is a great pass rusher, especially on the edge. But to cut on a dime and make a bunch of moves, you really have to be a special athlete. And when you go on that fast, he cut in and blew it out. Harvey Williams did the same thing as I'd running back when I was playing at LSU. Man, just really – when you have that much force going on your ligaments, you can't control it. So it's tough, man. It really is on these kids, especially on turf like that, on those surfaces.
Talking LSU football with Ruffin Rodrigue on 103.7 The Game. We'll get to the Cajuns before we're done here. But, Ruffin, the idea that they're going to publicly announce wide receiver D. Anderson suspended until he passes his conditioning test. Well, that doesn't happen in this program very much with Tommy Moffitt, does it?
No. You got to – you know, I don't know what happened with D as far as the summer workouts and all that kind of stuff. Some guys go home. Some guys can handle it. Michael Brooks never stayed for the summer, but he came back always in better shape than anybody, and he didn't have to work out when I was there. But you know, you gotta participate. You have to work out. You have to get ready to go. So if you're not in shape and you're not ready to go, that's not gonna put up with it. So you know, that's more of a pro mentality. Ed being in the pro ranks for that year and understanding that, and you know, Coach Arnsbarger was like that. We had a couple of guys that came in overweight and said, "You're going to run it off to you," and a couple of them quit. You know, because they one of them said he wanted to stay fat and happy. I won't mention his name. He's from Lafayette. He's one of the funniest guys I ever met. But he said, "I'd rather be fat and happy than run those gassers at 5:30 in the morning." So it's he needs to get in shape, man. You got to be ready to play. This is the SEC. You got a brutal schedule. You know, you got to be ready.
We'll go to the Cajun side, Ruffin, before we run out of time here. What do you think is different now that it's year two, right? So not only are they not having to kind of invent the wheel or reinvent it, it's their system. Most of the same players are back in it. The guys that they have recruited, they were the ones that were in on them. They didn't kind of inherit them. What do you think is different for Billy, Rob Sale, everybody this time around?
Culture, number one. The kids bought in last year, and you saw the team get better and better as the year went on. And that's the coaches developing a winning attitude, and you know, to keep fighting and doing all the right things and believe in the process and the system. And that's what it is right now. Is there the confidence level is there, and you know they're gonna have a chip on their shoulder when they go to the Superdome, 24-point underdogs to Mississippi State. You know, that's a slap in the face. And if I know a Billy and Rob Sale and all those guys on that staff, they have these guys ready to play. And that's what it is. It's culture. It's tackling. It's fundamentals. It's holding on to the football. All the little things you're going to see improvement on game by game with the Billy Napier coach team.
Hey, before we let you go, Ruffin, I know that August brings a lot of fun changes and improvements to Ruffino's on the River. One of them being it's going to be Lobster Month, I've heard.
Yeah. The whole month of August, we do $3 for $30. Dollars a lobster menu, and it's we do steam the lobsters, but we create some dishes out of the lobster meat, and it's, you know, it's live Maine lobster that we steam and make all these wonderful on dishes. It's appetizers, choice of three appetizers, entrees, and then dessert's not lobster, but the appetizers and entrees are. It's fantastic. I mean, the went through a lot of different items to get to the ones that we have, and it's a great deal. If you want to go and enjoy a good summer meal, especially with school starting and all that, a lot of people have to write some big checks for their kids to go to school. So this is a great value to have a full course meal, a three course meal for $30.
I'm excited about it. I'll be there obviously doing the show this Friday, but I already have reservations. My wife, a couple of friends. I haven't even told them about the 3 for $30 lobster menu yet, but we're excited to be there and look forward to seeing everybody else in Acadiana as well. Ruff, as always, thanks for the time, man.
Thanks, Ben. You have a great day.
You as well. Ruff and Roderick, the culture growing and taking root in Lafayette, and that's what makes this time around different for the Cajuns. That's some interesting insight, maybe, into what Caleb Von Chaisson is coming back from with that injury. He'll be the new number 18 on defense and first-time offensive lineman. And you just got Ruffin's thoughts on both of those players. All right, we're halfway home in the hour and for the program. We'll be right back in. Time to throw some shade. And we're going to wind down hour number two with some Billy Napier sound. But we got great guests coming as well. In hour three, Brandon Taylor, a former LSU number 18, with us at straight up 6 o'clock. James Buehr's talking high school football. Best quarterbacks and running backs in the area at 6:30. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back in to continue taking you home on 103.7 The Game.
Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
34 minutes after 5 o'clock, back in. More B2BS on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And for the next, say, 25 minutes, all you have to do is call 706-0111. Next scheduled interview, Brandon Taylor, former LSU Tiger, San Diego Charger. Yeah, they were still in San Diego then, Clint. Don't even try to correct me. Brandon's going to be with us at 6 o'clock to talk LSU football and new number 18s. But we've carved out plenty of time today for your daily reminder. So let's issue that PSA to everyone locally. Remember, no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can trust their professional installers inside your home. How valuable and, unfortunately, how rare that is in 2019. So make sure you remember the name Patio Center, and they're ready to up your patio game. All it takes to start is a trip to the website, patiocenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
Got a twofer on our hands today for the little Monday shade. Clint will deliver some from the Cleveland Browns. Imagine that later in the segment. But in the midst of the Astros throwing a collective no-hitter on Saturday, apparently there were fans leaving at Minute Maid Park. Don't take my word for it. Listen to Garrett Cole.
So why are you leaving? We have a no-hitter. I wonder if some of them didn't know. The majority of the fans were leaving. There was a few of them that were trying to communicate to people on the way up the stairs. And a couple people were kind of like surprised or whatever. But I just don't think everybody was actually aware what was going on. I mean, I wouldn't certainly leave, but I mean, if you want to leave, you can leave. I don't know, really. I mean, I'm not telling you whether to stay or leave, but I just hope that you know that it was a no-hitter.
Well, I am telling you whether to stay or leave. Your ass has to stay, and it's not about you, fan, so don't be selfish with this. If you were there for the entire game and nary a hit was surrendered for the entire 8 innings and you left, Dude, that's on you if that thing falls apart. It's not on Chris Davinsky in the ninth. That's on you if you take off from that game, Clint. And you know I'm right about this. If you don't believe in that type of superstition, you just don't know baseball.
Exactly. You do not leave during that game. And I'd almost say regardless of if it's your team or the other team that's playing. Because
oh, no, no, no. If it's not your team, then you probably intentionally leave. I believe in superstition cutting both ways, friend.
Okay. But like I said, it's just to me, I'm like, because you only have like so many times to where you could be like saying, hey, I was actually there for this no-hitter, this perfect game. I stayed there for the entire game.
You brought me down a road I didn't expect to go down. All right, so let's do this. If you're a Seattle Mariners fan,
yep.
Let's even give you the benefit of the doubt in this situation.
This is the second time this year.
Let's say that you live in the Houston area or that you're on business there. Point being, you didn't make some kind of mecca trip to go watch your terrible Mariners team play at Houston in a random early August game. Let's say that it was convenient for you and you were there. And it's 9-0 after 8. Are you really staying for the ninth as an M's fan there?
I actually
think it's your duty to leave at that point.
I think I'd stay. I mean, I'd be the person to stay because I'd say I was there for the entire game when that happened. And also, you never know. I mean, the Cards a couple weeks ago had a game where they rallied back down 10-0. So stranger things have happened.
All right, that's fair. I just think if it's your team, you have a duty to be there to help preserve the no-no. You were a part of it as it was occurring. You darn sure should be a part of it as it culminates. If you're on the other side, however, I could see absolutely, right? Almost like in protest fashion. I could see a walk-off. Not the kind of walk-off that you're accustomed to in baseball, but I could see a walk-out, right? I could see you feeling as if maybe you have a little power to change the course of events inside of Minute Maid Park. All right, CD, enough of that. I'm just glad that Garrett Cole gave voice to it. Briefly, if you could, explain what's going on with the Cleveland Browns and how they found their way back into shade today.
Oh, they definitely found their way back into shade. And a lot of it has to do with former head coach Bob Wiley, who wanted to make a lot of waves thanks to Hard Knocks, his appearances last summer with his pleasantries.
And the O-line coach with the gut?
Yes, sure. Yes, our favorite guy, the guy with the gut. So that, he wound up doing an interview with him, Zach Gallup on CBS Sports Radio, an affiliate. We actually aired that early Saturday morning, and he actually threw a lot of shade on the Cleveland Browns organization. New head coach Freddie Kitchens didn't like the fact that they didn't stay with interim head coach Greg Williams. And that was a bit of detail about the circumstances of his firing. His daughter told him that he was fired. Not the front office. The daughter, his daughter was the first person to tell him that he was fired.
As in she saw it on like TV or social media and reported it to him?
Yes, basically.
Oh, that's not quite as bad. It's not good. But that's not quite as bad as Yasiel Puig
yes.
having to hear from a fan in the stadium while in the dugout that he was traded.
It's still rough, though.
It's not good.
No, it's not at all.
It's not good. Wait till somebody tells you after the show that you've been fired and it's not our GM. Okay, that probably won't happen. Keyword, probably.
We're done throwing shade on bumper-to-bumper sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Good stuff today, CD. Hey, before we hit our final break of the hour, let me take a tally here. Are you taking calls at people entering the B2BS Fantasy League draft?
I am. So far, I've got a couple in the boat there.
What's the total number in the boat?
It's two.
And I told you. I said, I'm going to give it 2 hours. I'm giving the show 2 hours. I'm not even going to promote it live. Let's just kind of see how this thing progresses.
For what it's worth, we got one before your show even started during Jim Rome.
I'm telling you. Blaine hosts a show on Thursday, goes to the Stros game, boom, no hitter.
Yep.
I didn't mention it live. Okay, so we're at two right now. We'll ratchet it up a little more in the 6 o'clock hour. When we return, Raging Cajuns fans, we got the cure for what ails you. Sound for Billy Napier earlier today. UL camp started on Friday. It's progressed into this week. Time to put on the pads. Oh, boy. We'll be right back in. More Bumper to Bumper Sports, painting our segment Vermilion and White next on 103.7 The Game.
We need to-
interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by. Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Ready to roll into hour number three. I'm Ben Love, and this is Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. The famous Clint D with me for the next hour. Fall camp in the air. We've talked plenty of Raging Cajuns, LSU Tigers as well. Let's keep it going with the purple and gold. Waiting aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, former LSU Tiger. He wore the number 18 himself, Brandon Taylor, our guest. Brandon, how are you tonight?
Doing good, Dan. How you doing?
Man, it's fantastic to be talking football, and it's really this close. What do you remember when you were in Baton Rouge, what this time of year was like for you?
This time of year right now is just, it's all mental focus, physical focus, because you're in training camp time right now, and that's all you're doing right now. You eat, sleeping, and basically thinking football, going to sleep and waking up right now.
When you were presented with the number 18, tell me about that process. Like, who actually informed you, and give me some of your reaction.
Actually, it was one day I was in the training room because I was coming off of an injury my junior year, which I had tore my Liz Frank playing against Alabama my junior year. So I was going into my senior year, that whole off season, that summer I was rehabbing, and Jack Marucci had called me in his office, and he asked me would I wear the number 18, and he had Matt Mark on the phone, and he talked to me about it and told me that he didn't think of anybody else that would be more responsible enough to wear it that year. So I accepted it, and we had a great season in 2011.
Yeah, no, that would be an understatement. A team undefeated in the regular season. You wore the number well. Tell us about the newest number 18s, Kalevon Chaisaw, a linebacker, and for the first time, an offensive lineman in Lloyd Cushenberry.
That's what's the most thing I'm most excited about, Lloyd Cushenberry, because he's the first offensive lineman, being that I was the first defensive player to wear 18 when I received the number. Man, those two guys, you just hear nothing but praise from the teammates, to the coaches, the people around campus, to the women that work upstairs, the recruiting girls, Miss Shan, that whole staff. Like, it's so much upside with those guys, and every time you see them, they got a smile on their face. Like, who doesn't want to meet them like that? I know sometimes you got to be serious, but at some points you got to be the person that uplifts your teammates in hard situations. And those guys, they're just perfect matches for the number.
Brandon Taylor, our guest, a former LSU Tiger, and for the second straight year, you can hear him along with Hunt Palmer and Marlon Favorite, part of the pregame and postgame shows on the LSU Sports Radio Network. One more time, if you don't mind, Brandon, on the number 18, is that a fraternity that actually stays in touch? Like, please tell me there's a group text or something like that.
Oh, my God. Sometimes I want to put it on Do Not Disturb. It's like, we get the joking in there. Like, it's crazy. Like, it's like we've all been knowing each other forever, and half of us have never even played with each other. But it's like it's crazy because it's like everybody in that group is meant to be in that group. And Jack Marucci is in the group, and he sees a side of us that he's never seen while we were playing football. He's like, y'all dudes are really out of control. Y'all are big kids. They're like, yeah, Jack, we've been like this. You've seen us serious all the time because we were so focused on football and trying to be the best. But now we're loose, and we just get to be ourselves.
And I look at it, Brandon, from the outside, y'all do so many different things now for a living, right? That's got to be part of the funny, I guess, aspect.
Yes, we do so many different things for a living, and we're all over the country. Right now, I'm in Houston on the job. Matt Moss is in Denver, Colorado. Foster Moro's in Oakland. It's just, we're all over the place, and we're all doing different things, and we're all striving in life. And that's just how we strive on the football field, wearing the number 18. It's like, once you cross over from football to real life, you still have to carry and hold that torch as number 18 and be prosperous and lead and show people that, man, it's still okay to do things, do it the right way, and still work out. Don't take any shortcuts in life or in football.
We're talking LSU football with Brandon Taylor on 103.7 The Game. All right, we'll get to this year's team. And you and I have talked before what it was like as you were coached up by Ron Cooper in that secondary. Now there's a guy who's been there for quite some time, and Corey Raymond. He's being helped by Bill Bush. What do you make out of their, I guess, degree of mentorship and what they're passing on to this generation of DBU?
A lot of knowledge. Corey Raymond played in the league and was great at what he did. Actually, Corey Raymond, my freshman year, when me and Patrick Peterson and Ron Brooks came into LSU, Corey Raymond was the GA coach, and I was playing cornerback. So he was coaching me at corner. So he was the cornerback's coach, and being with him at that time, like, we still keep in touch. DT, you know, you played corner and I was coaching. I was like, yes, sir, I do. Said, man, I wish you would stay at corner. I'm like, nah, safety was the best move for me. But I've known Raymond I've been knowing Raymond since I was in probably a sophomore in high school. So I just know what he can bring to the table and what he can get out of those guys. And the thing is, Raymond's going to put them guys in a position to succeed. So as a player, if you make a mistake on the field, you can't do nothing but point the finger at yourself. And that's the type of coach that you want, because if I make a mistake, it's my fault. I can't say nothing about my coach. He put me in the right position. And when you have a coach like that, you can't do nothing but succeed.
I remember, especially in 2011, it was, you mentioned Ron Brooks, Tyrann Mathieu, guys that were just so versatile in where they could play in what used to be the Mustang package. And now I look at a player like Jacoby Stevens. Do you see him being a little similar to those guys?
I think Jacoby brings a lot more to the table than we all could, because Jacoby can play outside linebacker and he can rush on the edge as a stand-up outside linebacker. We could dream about doing that, but we couldn't do that. Which we had some of the best to do it with Sam Montgomery and Barkevious Mingo, but he just brings a different element, and teams going to have to scheme on him because they're going to have to know where he's at, because he's going to be a problem for any offensive scheme or any offensive coordinator when he's on the field. So that's a great advance for LSU defense, because you can plug him into anywhere and he's going to know the playbook. He's not going to make mistakes. He's going to make big plays. And you've seen it time and time again, like, keep him on the field, move him around, confuse the defense, confuse the quarterback, because they're going to be focused and keyed in on him.
I know that while you were at LSU, there were freshmen that came through, and eventually they might make their way into the rotation. I'm not sure there was anything quite like what we're seeing right now with Derek Stingley Jr., when you just know day one he's a starter at cornerback. How would you treat that if you were a more veteran DB and that situation occurred?
I mean, you just got to embrace him. And plus, you only see certain athletes like that every so often, every so many years. I was blessed to play with a few of them. Me coming in, getting a start my sophomore year, I playing beside Chad Jones, a freak of nature. I had Patrick Peterson on the outside, a freak of nature. And then going to my sophomore year, my senior year, I had Tyrann Mathieu, like, the best thing since sliced bread. Like, I was blessed to have that talent around me. Those guys just need to embrace that and lift him up and know that at the end of the day, we're teammates, but we still competing. If I'm the second cornerback behind Stingley, hey, I still want to start. So when I do get on the field and my opportunity to get on the field with Corey Raymond and them, they rotate their DBs a lot. So everybody plays. So it should be no type of animosity between anybody. Like, when it's your time to get on the field, make your play and make your statement. Because LSU, we pump DBs in the NFL time and time again. I remember my senior year, Jalen Collins was he didn't touch the field. He was a redshirt freshman. Now this man is in the NFL. He was a second-round draft pick, one of the best corners to come out of LSU. And it's like, I remember watching him on TV. I'm like, man, Jalen. I remember Jalen and the scout team locking Odell and Jarvis up. Now I look at it. He's on TV, shining on TV in front of big crowds and stuff.
Crazy. We're coming down the stretch. Brandon Taylor, former LSU Tiger, our guest. All right, so we talked about what this time of year is like. How competitive does it get when you go ones-on-ones and all of a sudden, in this modern era, these DBs are looking at Jamar Chase. They're looking at Terrace Marshall. What's that like this time of year?
Oh, man, that's it doesn't get any better than that. And as a fan, you just have to enjoy and just feed off of this process, because you know, check out Jamar Chase, for example. Every time he touched the ball in the red zone, this man got in the end zone. Like, who isn't excited about that? And for the other receivers that's competing against him, it's like, okay, if he can do that, I can do that. And as DBs, this is like, no, I will not get scored on. So it's crazy that these guys have the tools to sharpen themselves as better players from the wide receivers that constantly hand DBU, DBU, LSU, DBU. And as I know what they're thinking. They're thinking, what about us? And that just makes them that much more better. And it's going to be crazy to see. I'm too excited. Right now, I can't even sit down and talk to you. I'm moving around, walking around in my room. Like, I'm fired up because just the potential, man. We just got something has to break through this season. Something just has to.
There are people in Houston right now wondering, what is this man doing pacing? Or maybe you're in a room by yourself. I don't know, Brandon.
I'm just here for football season. And I love this. And the recruits we got coming in, the way they're handling this process, Coach O, he's doing a phenomenal job. All the coaching staff, they're setting this school up for success, and I'm just ready to see it happen.
Hey, I got a PAT question for you. Have you talked to either Jarvis or Odell since they were reunited?
I've actually talked to both of them, and, man, it's just like kids in a candy store, because it's something like these – dudes have been at each other's hips since high school. The way they competed in each other, they always competed against each other in college with one hand catches. Like, man, you can go in the film room and just watch. Like, people didn't see what was going on at practice. Like, it was crazy. Now to see them reunite in the NFL is almost kind of like cheating. You got LeBron and AD and in the Lakers. Now you got Jarvis and Odell together with the Browns. And Baker Mayfield, who's probably one of the biggest motivators in NFL football right now, all together on one team. It's going to be crazy.
I think this whole football season is going to be fun and crazy. We look forward to listening to you again, our guest, Brandon Taylor. He'll be alongside Hunt Palmer, Marlon Favorite, pre- and post-game shows of the LSU Sports Radio Network. Brandon, thanks for doing this on the road, man. Let's catch up soon.
Oh, yes, sir, Ben. Anytime, big dog.
Brandon Taylor, former LSU Tiger, made his way to the league from LSU, part of a group that really bridged the gap, right? Baton Rouge to the NFL, DBU, and he absolutely carried that flag proudly while going through the program. Along with Kelvin Shepherd, I would tell you two of my favorite players to interview when I was a beat writer in LSU. That was a lot of fun. Our thanks to Brandon Taylor. You're listening to Bumper Sports, brought to you in large part every Monday by Relief Windows. When you think windows, doors, and siding in Acadiana, think Relief Windows and visit the website reliefwindows.com. We're coming right back. We'll take your calls at 706-0111. B2BS, well, we'll come right back around like a boomerang on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
That one got some people a little jacked up. It's not always, but it's always nice when it does happen that you get feedback immediately from an interview. People, I think, enjoyed Brandon Taylor there. I think we should discuss. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. Clint, it took no less than 10 seconds after the interview for me to get a little bit of a response immediately. That dude is fun to listen to. Why isn't he on more often? Might have to look into that. Now, I will tell you this. B. Taylor is a hardworking man. He does the radio stuff on Saturdays. It supplements a day-to-day grind, so believe me, I've tried to get Brandon on a number of times. Typically, the 4 and 5 o'clock hours are out. You think he was a little excited about some football?
I think he was very much excited about some football. Then again, aren't we all excited about getting football back in our lives? We're just a few short weeks away from football that actually matters, of course. We had the Hall of Fame game last Thursday.
How dare you run down the Canadian League like that?
Well, I mean, hey, like I said, stuff that matters, stuff that actually is aired on broadcast television, not on the four-letter network exclusively, and sure. TSN.
I don't even know what that is.
It's basically the four-letter network in Canada.
You being serious right now?
I'm being dead serious.
You're teaching me about something I don't know?
Yeah, TSN is basically the...
There is a Canadian version of the Mickey Mouse Network?
Yes, yes. And they use kind of similar graphics and everything, too. It's amazing.
Is there awesomely cheesy intro music?
No.
Do they have like a da-na-na, na-na-na?
I think they actually do use the da-na-na-na-na. Like, they do the same... It's like same exact graphics and stuff for like... Their Sports Center, which is C-E-N-T-R-E.
I can't. Nope. Not doing this anymore. We're not playing this game. That may be true, but I don't want to know anymore.
It's
all right.
True.
So we're excited for real football. Brandon Taylor obviously was pretty excited about it. And I will now tell YP, you people out there and in listener country, I'll tell you exactly what I informed the first texter after that interview. I did get two pretty big confirmations today. I love when we have great guests, and almost universally, people enjoy hearing them. So I'm very happy to tell you that Justin Vincent is back in Fridays at 5 p.m., the entire football season. Gordy Rush is back in Thursdays at 5 p.m., the entire football season. We got some things in the pipelines with high school football to continue improving our coverage there. We'll be doing the prep power hours at Pete's on Tuesdays with all your high school football needs. And basically what I'm telling you is I've got about four more that are on my list. One who was with us last year every week, and this is basically a warning shot that Gus Kattengill, you'll be getting a text from me tomorrow to lock that bad boy in, talking Saints football. I got three more, and I will not mention their names so as not to jinx them. I got three more that I want as weeklies. And so we'll see if we can't get that done. I will give you a hint that one is Cajuns themed. I'll give you a hint that one is SEC themed. And then another that would be a little more toward the National Football League.
Ooh.
But I would really, really like, and I don't often do this. In fact, I used to think it was not just ratchet. Kind of thought it was maybe a level or two lower than that, like sub-ratchet. I don't like people that pimp out for guests on Twitter. I know you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, exactly.
It's just not exactly my style.
Well,
right?
At least
I'm
publicly,
not going
right?
to at somebody publicly who's just super bleeping famous and say, hey, please come on my Lafayette, Louisiana-based sports talk show. No, I'd rather just try and use some connections to get there, and if I can't, that's what it is. But I'm not sliding into some dude's DMs,
okay,
and I'm not publicly asking for an appearance on my show. It's just not my style.
Okay.
For others, it's very much their thing. Yep. And I'm not disrespecting them. That's not my thing. That being said, I'm going to go against the grain a little bit here because I think this is local enough to where maybe it'll play a little better.
Okay.
I feel like I'm putting a one ad in on my radio show now. Seeking. Single white female. No, I'm just kidding.
You're married, man.
I know. All right. So I'm just making sure you're still awake over there. Seeking. Former Raging Cajuns player. Let's talk some damn Cajuns once a week.
That'd be
again,
really cool.
Again, I've got somebody that I'm working on here, and I'm going to try and reel them into the boat. Get all your sniffles in on the air as you can, sir. But we need more Cajuns influence on the show. Yeah, I'm going to talk it. Yeah, we're going to have Billy on as often as we can. But we need a little bit more. So former Cajuns players, holler at your boy. 706-0111. Get them in. We'll fit you in. We're all going to have a lot of fun for it because I can tell you, I feel like things are about to take another step forward. And if you didn't notice, they were pretty darn good last year. All right, Clint, before we run out of time in this segment, things were pretty darn good for the Saints last year, but they're hoping to kick it up a notch. And this is interesting. Sean Payton was asked over the weekend if Alvin Kamara can become a 1,000-yard receiver and a 1,000-yard rusher in the same year.
Well, look, I think he's got that flexibility in his game. I think he excels at a lot of things. He's got really, really good balance, and he's strong on his feet. So, you know, a lot of it just depends on, you know, each week, you know, where we see him and how we see him involved. And the sum total still, it starts with winning. And but he's got those traits. I mean, he's got those traits to run and receive.
The Marshall Faulk comparison is too easy. Doesn't mean it's untrue. And I think you know, for my 2 cents, Kamara out of the backfield is still catching up maybe to where peak Marshall Faulk, greatest show on turf, was. However, I think Kamara lines up a little more effortlessly as a slot receiver when has to do so. I think Kamara this early might be a better between the tackles runner than Marshall Faulk. Again, none of that is intended disrespect. I just think AK-41 is on a Hall of Fame type of track if he could stay healthy and he continues to be surrounded with the right pieces. I'm awfully excited to see what this year brings for Kamara. I think it's another step forward into just super-duper stardom. But you don't have to take my word for it or Sean Payton's. Let's go to former Florida linebacker, now Saints LB, Alex Anzalone. Here's what he has to say on covering Alvin Kamara.
He's always been good to me. You know, he's always been a tough cover. So, you know, when I'm covering, I'm always going to get locked in.
So the Saints continuing with training camp, and holy hell, Clint, Friday, first preseason game for the Saints. And if I am reading this year's schedule right, Saints v. Vikings?
Correct, at the Superdome. So, yeah, that's going to be fun on Friday night.
Yeah, man. So, again, we're getting ready for high school football on Friday night, but we'll definitely take some Saints football on a Friday night. Don't know how often we'll see the starters in this one, but a lot of the guys trying to find their way toward the 53-man. Obviously, it's huge.
Exactly. You know what the best part about all this has been? The fact that the Astros will be on the East Coast Friday night with them a 6:10, 6:15 first pitch right here at 103.7 The Game. So right after that, I'll be able to kind of roll out and actually enjoy maybe the full game.
I see what you're saying. I was wondering if you were trying to allude to the fact that viewers at home might be able to do some double screening, but then again, you can't really catch the Astros here on the reg.
Yeah, unless you have satellite. I think that's the only other thing that's going to keep you there. But I'm just saying, like, the fact that I'm saying for us, I'm saying it's a definite positive for us to be able to catch some Saints preseason.
So I try to carry myself with as much professionalism and dignity as I can on the show, right? Very mature. Yeah, right. Let me tell you how much of a child I was in Atlanta this weekend.
Okay, go ahead.
I've told you, and this makes perfect sense, but you can't catch. I have the MLB
at bat.
Thank you. My cousin and I split the cost of MLB, whatever it is, the at bat app, and we're able to watch every game, everywhere, both sides of the aisle, home or away broadcast. Except you can't get in this market the Astros or the Rangers.
Correct.
And I told you when I went to St. Louis, I thought I was going to impress all my relatives and throw the Cardinals up on the big screen by mirroring it. It was blocked. Nope. It was blacked out in St. Louis. I knew better than to try to watch the Braves while I was in Atlanta this weekend on the at-bat app.
Okay.
But what I did do while out at a restaurant / bar was put the Astros on. Just like a child, man.
Yes.
I was like, I will watch the damn Astros. Like, I can do it now. I'm going to watch it. So that's why it's so great we're carrying them on radio, man.
What was that on Saturday?
No, this would have been, I got there early. This was Thursday.
Oh, Thursday. Okay, the last game of that series. Okay.
Yes. So I was watching the Astros on a Thursday night on my iPhone while the Braves were on in the sports bar.
That sounds like you're winning life, brother.
Yes. All the while, my wife actually allowed these things to happen. So I'm just going to keep on trucking until management tells me otherwise. All right, we got a quick break. When we return, James Buers with the Acadiana Advocate, top running backs, top quarterbacks in our area this high school football season. Stick around. More Bumper to Bumper Sports coming right back at you on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com. Football!
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game, live online at 1037thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 1037 The Game.
Back in with more of the 6 o'clock hour. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and you are locked in to 1037 The Game. We're just about locked in, I like to think. We're kind of on a beeline, not just toward pro football, college football. We have talked both of those so far in the show today, but we're ready for some high school action as well. In fact, we are less than, I guess, 3.5 weeks, basically, until Jamborees. Then we'll have the regular season, the first Friday in September. Yeah, these are exciting times. And here to get you ready for them even more so, aboard the ARDCO Equipment Hotline, James Buers does a great job with the Acadiana Advocate. James, it's just about that time. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Ben. How are you doing, man?
Life is good here. We're ready for some high school football. And I'm ready for some, I guess, tops at their position in the Acadiana area. Let's play a round of that, shall we? We'll go running backs first. The top two or three running backs that our area is going to produce in 2019.
Well, it's an interesting crop because there's not a guy that really stands out to me, you know, like a Travion Benjamin did going into the year last year. But there are some really interesting names and some names that have some chance to do some special things within their own program. Starting off, I want to start with Rodney Dupuy from Church Point. This is a kid who's been playing since he was a freshman and has been starting since he was a freshman, is now on the cusp of breaking the Church Point rushing record, which was set by Tony Citizen back in the 80s, if I'm not mistaken. You know, he's a kid who's he's not tall. He's only about like 5'6", 5'7", but he's built really well, real stocky, strong kid. And he's a perfect fit for the for that wing T offense they run. You know, he's their fullback. He's really strong. He's got some quickness to him, can run away from people. I remember seeing him play Crowley last year, and there was a play at the near the goal line where he just bowled over somebody really easily, too. It didn't look like it took him much effort to do so. So he's a kid I'm certainly keeping an eye on, not only for that rushing record, but just being a key to a team in Church Point that is routinely a contender, but they seem to have bad luck when they get to the playoffs. One year, Rodney got hurt in the playoffs, and that kind of, you know, sunk their chances, I felt like, after having a really strong regular season. So keep an eye on Rodney Dupuy. Another kid, Dylan Monette, on the cusp of breaking a school record in Acadiana school record. Allie Broussard set that record in the early 2000s. I think, I'm not sure the exact number Dylan needs to break the record, but he's getting close. And if he has a big year, he can certainly do it. Now, the thing with Dylan is he's battled some injuries in the past, you know, so he's got to stay healthy in order to do something like that. But he's a kid who's committed to Army like his teammate Lucky Brooks. And I think when you have two guys like that, it takes pressure off of Dylan. So, you know, here's hoping Dylan can stay healthy and have a big year for the Rams, who look like they're going to be a really good 5A team. I think they can make a run this year. They were, you know, inexperienced and young last year, but they were still able to get to the quarterfinals and give Zachary all they wanted. This year, I think they're going to be even better. And then the third kid I would keep an eye on, and again, there's a lot of kids I can mention here, but Logan Gabriel from Lafayette Christian, he's a kid who, you know, like a lot of the kids at LCA, because they build such big leads in games, they get taken out at halftime, and they don't get to build the statistics like they normally do. But Logan is just built super well, a big kid, really physical. There's not many kids at that level that can really bring him down in the open field. So I like Logan a lot. I think he'll probably, his profile as far as a recruit will rise this year with more reps. You know, they're losing quarterback Zachary Claymore, who was a big-time threat both in the passing and running game. So Errol Rodgers, who was one of their receivers last year, comes back over to quarterback. And I think Logan should be a big security blanket for Errol. I look for Logan to have a big year this year.
Gotta love it. The love for running backs. We'll switch it up now. We'll go to the quarterbacks next. Our guest, the one and only James Buers with the Acadiana Advocate. Those were his top running backs in the area this year. I mentioned we're going to quarterbacks, but I'm going to put an arm behind your back here, James. You cannot go with Caleb Holstein. Sorry. This is Acadiana Sports Station. We air St. Thomas More's games. The kid is a dynamo, right? We know that. But give me some others that play the signal caller position who are primed for a dynamite season.
Well, yeah, that's the thing about Caleb. He's kind of on a different level, and maybe a notch or two below them, there's a group of kids that I think could have really big years. But I'd start with Drew Leger from Vermilion Catholic. You know, he actually, I think, finished second in the area in passing yards last year, passed for more than 3,000 yards. And, of course, BC is an offense traditionally that likes to throw the ball a lot. And, you know, Drew's played since he was a freshman because when his brother was the quarterback a couple years ago, he got hurt and it kind of forced Drew into the starting lineup. But I think that experience really helped him last year. Then he stepped in as the starter last year the experience helped him his freshman year, and then he stepped in as a starter last year as a sophomore and played great. I think he threw for almost 30 touchdowns. So, clearly a kid with a lot of talent. He's growing into his body and getting bigger, and I think his name will start to kind of ring out a little bit in recruiting circles and things like that as he continues to grow. Another kid I really like is from Crowley, Marquise Garrett. You know, the kid, Marquise is the son of Shane Garrett, who played at Texas A&M and then in the NFL. And the thing with Marquise is just putting it all together. You know, he's got a big arm. He's got great athleticism, can run. And, you know, Crowley traditionally is a team that's very competitive because they just, they have so many good athletes over there, and Jeff DeWald does a great job. So I look for Marquise to have a big year going into his senior year. He's got a really nice running back in Obadiah Butler. They do lose a nice tight end target, whose name is slipping my mind, but, I think Marquise will have a big year. Another kid I would keep an eye on too is Cole Seamon from Ascension. Cole, kid who's a great athlete. You know, I remember seeing Ascension play Catholic New Iberia last year. And Catholic New Iberia, you know, a team that went to the state championship game in Division III, had a lot of trouble defending Cole, both as a runner and as a passer. You know, he loses his best receiver, but I think Cole is a kid that people should keep an eye on because of his talent. Another kid I want to mention, too, is Notre Dame's Ben Broussard. Ben led Notre Dame to the state championship last year, and they beat Catholic High. Ben is a great runner. His best asset is his legs, but I think he's an underrated passer, and he just does a great job of controlling that pro-style offense. So those are the kids I would keep in mind. Like I said with the running backs, there's certainly a lot of kids I could mention, but those are the kids that come to mind as far as the top quarterbacks, right under Caleb Holstein, obviously.
All right, we've taken care of the offensive backfield. Spending a little more time with James Buehrs of the Acadiana Advocate. Now I want to take a look at some of the premier districts that we canvass on the program. I'll start with, I guess, what's now 5-4A. And what I would imagine the case is it St. Thomas, More, and then kind of the rest? My biggest question is, has that gap closed from 2018?
You know, I really don't think it's closed that much. STM, just with all the, you know, with obviously with Caleb Holstein coming back, and then, you know, some of the skill guys they have coming back, like Luke Howard and Jack Besh, and, you know, they always have guys to replace. They start a ton of seniors every year, but it seems like they reload so well that I would just say that STM is just a cut above some of those other teams. Now, there's talent across the board in that district. You know, you talk about Westgate with Kayshawn Boutte, the LSU commitment, even McColvin's son, who's committed to Kansas State. Keyshawn Callaghan is another kid who recently committed to Louisiana Monroe. So they certainly are super talented, and, you know, they won a playoff game last year. Tarrenfro is another team I'm super intrigued by. They returned, you know, a bunch of offensive linemen and are finally more experienced in that position group. You know, even Terling with Sammy Long coming back, their quarterback, I'm really intrigued by Terling. But I just don't think anyone significantly closed the gap on STM. They look like the clear favorite in that district. And I think they're a favorite in Division II overall to win the state championship because UI loses so much talent. So I would think the Cougars are out in front, but, you know, some order of Tarrenfro, Westgate, or Terling, I would think would finish second. I would probably lean towards Terling. Just traditionally, they're the second best team in that district usually.
All right, we're going to finish up with the district that I have known for some time since I moved here, at least as 3-5A. I think it's still the same numerically, but it's got some differences as well, including a newcomer in Southside.
Right, yeah, it's still 3-5A, but Southside is a new team, and certainly Southside, you know, to join the LHSA and then immediately have to play 5A football is going to be a huge challenge for them. Frankly, I don't know how they're going to adapt to that. You know, they might have enough kids, but just development-wise and experience, it's difficult to jump into one of the more difficult 5A districts and be competitive. So we'll see what happens. I think I've talked about their quarterback, Dylan Monette, not to be confused with the running back of Acadiana named Dylan Monette, but Southside's quarterback, Dylan Monette, is a really good player, so I would keep an eye on him. But to me, I think this is Acadiana's district to win. They won it last year and were able to get to the quarterfinals, but I think they're a better overall team this year. So I would think, you know, with the two running backs coming back, you know, three starters coming back on the offensive line, you know, and some experience on defense as well, I think the Rams are going to be really good. You know, Como, though, is a team that I'm really, really interested by. They have some college-level talent on that team this year, including that quarterback with Trey Harris and then at receiver with Malik Neighbors, a kid who's getting recruited by Power 5 schools. You know, they really have some talent on that team. So I'll be interested to see how Como does this year. You know, teams like Nish are super interesting with Kurt Ware taking over that program. Even Lafayette High, you know, I know they've struggled in recent years, but these teams have been getting better, and they're still looking for their first playoff appearance in the split era. They, you know, the split era started in 2012. They have yet to make the playoffs since then. So I'll be interested to see if the Lions can finally break through this year. But clearly, I think Acadiana is the best team, at least from the Lafayette area, and will obviously be competing with, you know, Barb and Sulphur and Sam Houston.
It's going to be a fun year, and really it's just about here at this point. James, we appreciate you coming aboard, I guess, spitting some facts and getting us even closer to that first Friday in September.
Thanks so much, man. I appreciate it, man.
Anytime. And anytime we bring him on, ratings skyrocket, and we all get a little more excited. We do need to hit our final break of the program. When we return, it's time for Clint to take his turn at the mic. The Astros had a collective no-no over the weekend. How big of a deal is that in the last, say, 5 years? And a real storied run, the golden era of Houston Astros baseball. Clint's going to tell you all about it. You're listening to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. Missed an interview?
No!
Acadiana Sports Station has got you covered.
Explain how.
Just head over to 1037thegame.com and check out the on-demand section.
Woohoo!
Now back to Ben Love and Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
Right back at it for the final time today. Let's put a bow on the show. I'm Ben Love, and this is Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game. The famous Clint D in tow, and he doesn't just press buttons, play dynamite music, do a lot of cool stuff on Twitter, and correct me, you know, once every 45 seconds, which I probably deserve. He also loves to take you under the dome. And it's a segment that we started here, obviously so popular, it spawned its own show, 10 a.m. to noon, Saturdays on Acadiana Sports Station. And so when we can get back to the roots, really, when we can get back to where this thing started, we always try to. Understandably, today's show has been football heavy. It's crazy, Clint. I've been getting texts all show long. People saying, yeah, it's starting to feel like football now. Yeah, we're talking to a lot of people. LSU, Saints, UL. You just heard as well, James Buers, right? We're talking prep football. But anytime the Astros, who we carry on 103.7 The Game, anytime the Stros make history, well, we don't want to make light of that subject. And yeah, we did have Brian McTaggart, MLB.com. He was with us at 4:15. Feels like many moons ago, not just 2+ hours ago. We talked Stros, the combined no-hitter, the fact that you just got Aaron Sanchez in from the Blue Jays. You finished that thing out with Chris Devinsky in between. Another new Stro, as well as former LSU Tiger Will Harris. They got it done with a combined no-hitter, and that was unique. But I want some context, and Clint, I know, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that's what you're going to provide here. So take them under the dome. Where does this bad boy rank? What they accomplished on Saturday, just how special was it?
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
The last 5 years for a Houston Astros fan have been positively delightful because of one big reason. They won a World Series. That is without a doubt the zenith of the last 5 years for the Houston Astros. But last Saturday wasn't half bad with a combined no-hitter for the second time in franchise history. But where does that rank amongst the great franchise moments in the last 5 years in my mind? That's what we're talking about today. And let me talk to you about what my moments are in terms of the top five and where that no-no ranks. Obviously, I think number two has to be winning the ALCS over the New York Yankees, because it's one thing to wind up winning the World Series and make it to the postseason after the way the previous seasons had been under the Astros banner. Obviously, you know, you look at everything, they wind up going from losing 100 games to winning 100 games with a lot of consistency. But to me, without a doubt, it's beating the Yankees, because the Yankees are the symbol of excellence. They're the gold standard that everybody looks at as being the big dog. And when you defeat the evil empire, it's a lot like watching a Star Wars movie. Pun definitely intended there. Whenever you just see the team that everybody wants to beat finally goes down, and you're the team that did it, it feels pretty good, and it feels it's a little bit easier of a path. And of course, the Astros winning the World Series, number one. Yankees, number two. Number three for me, I have to say, again, going from 100 losses to 100 wins in the rapid-fire succession that they did, making all the right moves. It wasn't quite the World Series run, but you got to the postseason, and you made yourself look really, really good in the process. It was a phenomenal year for the Astros when they got to 100 wins for the first time in what felt like a long time. They'd actually been relevant in the postseason. Picture number four for me, Mike fires his complete game no-hitter not long after getting traded from, I believe, the Oakland A's. He was a part of, I can't remember exactly who he was a part of when he got traded, but regardless, when Mike Fiers threw that no-hitter, it was amazing. It was like, this guy is actually really, really good. He got him at the deadline. It was just a phenomenal pickup. A couple of starts later, he throws that complete game no-hitter. Number five, it's got to be the Astros combining no-hitter from this past Saturday because it was just everything about it. And it really underscores how good that offense was on Saturday. They wound up having 15 hits and 9 runs. The night before, they had, I believe, 6 runs off of 9 hits. It was really nice, but not what you needed when it comes to the Houston Astros and that offense. That high-powered offense was underscored by a pitching staff that was straight fire. Seeing Aaron Sanchez look really, really good in his debut for the Astros after going 3-14 with the Toronto Blue Jays, it was a breath of fresh air and really shows a sign of things to come because everybody's talking about Zach Greinke. He's coming in tomorrow night. He's getting ready to go. But I think everybody was not necessarily looking at Joe Biagini and Aaron Sanchez because not necessarily their numbers aren't that sexy. The name brand isn't that sexy. But my goodness, Aaron Sanchez put it on a table and said, hey, I'm ready to go, ready to roll, and I can't wait to see what he does in the future. So quick rundown and recap of 1 through 5. Number one, World Series. Number two, winning the ALCS against the Yanks. And then you've also got going from 100 losses to 100 wins. Again, this is kind of tugging to the heartstrings type of thing for me. Number four, it has to be the Mike Fiers no-no, and then the combined no-no, number five. So it makes a lot of sense when you think about it. A lot of bias in this, a lot of opinion, but it feels like at the same time, there's a lot of straight-up facts of life when you just look up and down that top five list.
Good form and good show, old boy. Hopefully this has been a great show for all of you as well. It's just the way we want it to start a Monday. We'll be back in studio tomorrow, 4 until 6:35. The Astros will take on the Rockies Tuesday night. It's a day game for the Astros Wednesday. So as soon as they're done with their 110, 105, whatever it is, afternoon start, we'll come in, take you to Five Guys Stories and Lies, 6 o'clock on Wednesday. Thursday, full 3-hour Monty at the Tap Room River Ranch. Friday, 2 hours over at Rufino's on the River, as we celebrate life and truly continue to get you ready for football in early August. Thanks to all of our guests today. A lot of fun talking Stros, LSU, preps, and more with Brian McTaggart, Ruffin Rodri, Brandon Taylor, and earlier this hour, James Buers. What a show for a Monday. Glad I got some rest in the ATL, but it was good to be back. For the famous Clint D, my name is Ben Love. And you have been listening to Bumper Sports per the usual on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game and 1037TheGame.com. We'll catch you tomorrow, 4 p.m.